for downloading the Missouri Review Sound Booth podcast. We're broadcasting from the University of Missouri campus in Columbia, Missouri, home of the Missouri Review, the quarterly that brings you the best contemporary literature in fiction, nonfiction, and poetry. Every week, we'll be featuring a wide range of readings and interviews with writers, editors, and agents. This week on the Missouri Review Sound Booth, we talk to agent Stacia Decker of the Donald Moss Agency. Stacia talks to us about the best way to get an agent's attention and how to make sure an agent is right for you. I wanted just to start with the question of maybe you telling us how you got started in the publishing industry.
In some ways, it's pretty typical. I started as an unpaid intern. I was actually doing an MFA, and I was working on my thesis and started interning a couple of days a week for free. And, the assistant who was supervising me left, and I interviewed for her job and got it. So, I started as an editorial assistant and worked my way up.
Mm-hmm. And how many different places have you worked now?
I started as an assistant at FSG, and then I moved with my boss to Harcourt when she became editor-in-chief. And worked my way up to editor at Harcourt, and I was laid off during the merger with Houghton Mifflin, and worked very briefly at a small literary agency and then moved to Donald Moss. So, four places.
And what, as you're kind of going through the slush pile of submissions, what do you look for in query letters and in writing samples?
Well, I'm looking for a good hook. I'm looking for a well-written query letter. And I'm looking for the writing, in the pages. I'm looking for an idea that sounds interesting and writing that hooks me. I'm looking for a strong voice that hooks me from the start. I am very voice-driven, but the hook also matters. If it's an idea that I've seen a million times, that doesn't help. If it's an intriguing idea, that certainly does help. But I'm very voice-driven. I want to love it from the first sentence.
Mm-hmm. How important is the query letter in kind of setting up what you're expecting to read?
I know query letter is perfect. Everyone I've signed had problems with the query letter, except for maybe one. I think we had one sort of perfect query letter. So the query letter is going to have flaws, and that's fine. What's most important is the writing, but a bad query can hurt you. If I can't tell from the query what the story is, that's not good. Or if the query itself is full of cliches and, pastiche, that's not good. So it is important to have a query that grabs my attention, but a great query with so-so sample pages is worse than a so-so query with great sample pages.
So it's always coming back to the actual writing.
Right, because I'm going to rewrite your query. I mean, I'm going to write the pitch letter that goes to the editor. So it's the pages that matter the most. I can reframe it. I can describe it myself.
And in terms of, you obviously want to start a relationship with an author, but, also be able to sell their work, because that's your job. How important is it that the scope of the book? Do, bigger books always have a better chance than smaller, more quiet books?
I don't get to decide what a big book is often. The publisher decides that a lot of times. I have signed plenty of things that I thought would be a huge book, that then maybe 30 rejections in is going to be published as a smaller book than I imagined it. And I've also signed things that I thought would be kind of a hard sell because of content or something like that, and had a lot of editors interested in how to be a lead title. So I have to go by what I love. I've signed plenty of things that I thought would be hard sells just because I couldn't resist. I have to sort of go by, I love the voice, I can't resist this, I'm going to work on this.
And what would your ideal relationship be between yourself and your client?
Well, this is sort of a joke. Ideally, I want to be endlessly entertained and have the client make me a lot of money, that would be ideal. I will settle for being entertained. I will settle for really enjoying working with my clients. That's the best part of the job. For any agent-author relationship, you want to have really good communication. You want to be on the same page, both in terms of the work and strategy and, you know, career expectations. And I think that that leads to, you know, enjoying working with each other in addition to a strong business relationship.
What do you think is the best way to kind of establish that you're both on the same page in terms of expectations?
It's just communication. I mean, you're going to meet some agents where you're not on the same page, and so you have to find that out by communicating. It helps to learn as much about the industry as you can sometimes, because then you're able to communicate better sometimes. On the other hand, you know, there are plenty of authors who are just busy writing and not obsessing about the industry, and that's also really great. So I think it's easy for agents to say that an author should, you know, shop around and talk to lots of agents. So a lot of authors are like, you know, if I could get any agent to offer representation, that's great. I don't have multiple offers to shop around. So this can sound sort of like easier said than done, but you want to ask a lot of questions and you want to keep that communication flow going throughout the career as things develop. You know, the first book, you're just trying to sell it. And then when you start to get to, you know, the second, third, maybe 10th, 11th book, you're really starting to think about larger issues in terms of career strategy. And it's important that you have a lot of communication going into that.
Is there ever a point where, when you're working with a client, either from your perspective or from theirs, the relationship just isn't working anymore and you need to kind of split for both of your benefits? And how do you know, you know, when it's time?
Sure. I mean, you know, agents and authors do split up all the time. Well, not all the time, but, you know, it happens. And I think that it can happen for a variety of reasons. From the agent's perspective, it can be realizing that you don't feel like you're the best advocate for the work. Like, you don't feel like you are, like, you know what to do with it. I think when the agent gets to a point where they don't know what to do with the work editorially, or they don't feel that they have the insight or editorial skills or whatever it is, you know, they say, okay, I don't think this work is working and I don't think that I know what to do with it. Or part of that is, I don't think that I know how to sell this. I can imagine somebody else doing a great job of selling this, but not me. I don't know what to do. You know, that can be, and that sometimes happens when an author wants to change the genre that they're writing in, or wants to go in a different direction with their career. And that's often, I think, where authors will leave agents, when they feel that they're not on the same page anymore in terms of what they should be writing or what they should do next. So it can be sort of an organic thing where you realize, you know, one party realizes, hopefully both parties realize, and it's amicable, or maybe one party really realizes that they're really just not the best fit. It's a phrase we use all the time. It sounds really cliched, but you do want to be the right match and feel like you're the right fit.
And do you get most of your clients from the queries you get, or is a lot of it kind of the word of mouth, or, you know, reading different literary publications? You know, how much of your client base is just coming to you unsolicited, and then how much is kind of the inner network kind of working?
You know, a lot of people think that they have to have an in, that they have to have a connection, and a lot of people are signed from the slush pile. My clients are a mix between referrals and slush, but there's plenty of slush in there. And sometimes the authors that you find in the slush pile are the ones that sell the most. So, you know, it's just sort of not blind querying, but research querying really does work.
And just so our kind of listeners can know what odds you're up against, can you just take us through the process of, you know, signing a client and then, you know, the process of you trying to sell their book so they can get some kind of understanding of what, you know, the business aspect looks like?
Right. I mean, it's, I'm sure you hear this from everyone. It's different for everyone. If you are querying, you know, in the slush pile, then you're up against anywhere from, you know, tens to hundreds of queries that week alone. And it really varies how many. If you have a new agent, someone who's new to agenting and they're building their list, then they're going to request a lot more and they're going to sign a lot more. if you have a more experienced agent who has a full list, then they're going to be a lot more selective because they just don't have time. It's going to take somebody really standing out and someone who's different from what they already have, you know, that sort of thing. So so that can vary how hungry the agent is in terms of finding new clients. Then once you're signed, you are going to go through a round of edits probably with your agent to whatever degree. Some agents edit a lot. There are some agents who will say, you know, I move the manuscript from one inbox to the next, but a lot of agents edit to some degree, sometimes heavily. And then you're going to, and so that can take months. You might be signed and be asked to do a major revision or some sort of revision, and that can be months. Sometimes it can be months just getting that off the ground because you got signed, great, but now the agent wants to reread the work and she's got other things on her plate and it's going to take a while. So some matter of months later, you go out on submission, and then that process can take a really varying amount of time. I've sold books in 3 weeks, and I've sold books in 3 years. So obviously, you know, this sort of dream of selling it in 3 weeks or less, but a lot of times it can be a year, it can be 18 months, it can be 6 months. It really, really varies. And that's where already you want to have communication with your agent. Are they going to, you know, how often are they going to update you? Are you going to see all the rejections or just know that a house rejected? Or are you going to see nothing? Are you not going to know anything until you get an offer? You know, that sort of thing. You know, so at this point, you've already possibly been years into the process, especially maybe you had a first work that you and the agent went out with and it didn't sell, so you wrote something else and, you know, now you're out with that. It really varies. And, you know, then you start the process of actually getting the book published, and that can take anywhere from, you know, usually it's usually around a year, but it can take 9 months to 18 months, and you're going to go through another round of edits, and you're going to go through copy edits, and you're going to go through first pass and cover comps and all of that. So it's a long process.
Probably another good reason to make sure you're working with an agent that you can actually really, you know, have a good business relationship with, because it's a really long haul.
It's a long haul, and you will have a lot of questions at each stage. You enter into a new stage that's full of new things you haven't done before and new questions. And so authors should definitely feel free to ask their agents a lot of questions. I mean, anytime you're working with a first-time author, it's all new to them. And a lot of times authors feel like they don't want to bother an agent, but you have to ask those questions. It's not bothering the agent. She's there to answer your questions. And we don't know how much an author knows. Sometimes a first-time author has a lot of friends who are published. They know how it all works. They've run conferences, you know. And other times, they don't know anything at all, and then you can kind of forget that, and they have to remind you, you know, what happens next. And each stage is full of that, is full of stuff you've never done before. And even if you have done it before, it can be different at every press to some degree. And so, yeah, you have to be able to have a relationship where you can, you know, email in and say, what's going on now? Where are we at? You know, what do I do next? That sort of thing.
A lot of your clients write, you know, crime, suspense, you know, thrillers. What is it about those genres that interests you?
Well, I mean, those genres are just fun to read. You know, when you're reading crime fiction, it's fast-paced, it's voicey, it's fun. It's, you are vicariously living through people who are facing situations you hope never to face and making decisions you hope never to face. And there's always that element of, you know, finding out what a character will do in the worst possible circumstances. And so you get to see people push to their limits and see what they do. And that, you know, it's a way for us to explore our fears and have order restored at the end. And along the way, there's, you know, this great, fast-paced, entertaining read.
Mm-hmm. You've mentioned in other interviews that you are drawn towards this kind of, like, unpredictable violence that happens in fiction, in these kinds of fiction. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about that.
Well, with the crime fiction that I have published and a lot of the stuff that I've repped, when I was asked to describe it, I, you know, came up with that the common denominator was that there was a strong voice, fast-paced plotting, dark humor, and unpredictable violence. And that described, I was publishing Alan Guthrie and Ray Banks and Declan Burke, and that was descriptive of their work and stuff that I enjoyed reading. when, you know, if you're doing crime fiction, then violence drives the plot, so it better be unpredictable. And with any type of, with any genre, with any story, you're dealing with a lot of tropes and conventions, and the key is to make, is to inject unpredictability and the unexpected into those tropes and conventions, whether it's literary fiction or genre fiction. We want a story to be somewhat familiar, even just in terms of structure. You know, we want the third act to balance the first act. It's unsatisfying and puts us off kilter if too much is unfamiliar, but at the same time, you know, we don't want it to be boring, we don't want it to be cliche, we don't want it to be pastiche. There needs to be these unexpected and inventive elements to it. At the same time, there's some comfort in having a, you know, a traditional story arc and having a traditional story structure.
Are there any other final tips you would give for writers searching for agents?
There are plenty. I would say writers should query probably a lot more agents than they think. I sometimes see people say, you know, oh, I queried 30 agents. And that's a drop in the bucket. There are a lot of us. So you should query a lot of agents. You should do a lot of research into those agents. And sometimes I hear stories of people having bad experiences with agents or going through a lot of agents. And often it seems like if they would have done some research, then maybe they could have anticipated that wouldn't be a great fit. So you should do your research. You should ask a lot of questions at every stage. At the, you know, if they're offering representation, you should ask how they work. You should ask what expectations they have and sort of set out your own. So it all comes down to a lot of communication.
Great. All right, Stacia, those are my questions. Thanks for talking to us.
Listening to the Missouri Review Sound Booth podcast, music by Mark Catalano. Check us out online at MissouriReview.com. There you can subscribe to the magazine, follow our Poem of the Week feature, and enter our 2014 Jeffrey E. Smith Editor's Prize with $5,000 cash prizes in poetry, fiction, and essay. Thanks for listening, and check back next week for a new episode of the Missouri Review Sound Booth podcast.